This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Yesterday, the Central Intelligence Agency released a raft of previously secret papers about China. The documents span a 30-year period from 1948 to 1978, during which China underwent dramatic social, economic, and political upheaval under Mao Zedong. The Great Leap Forward, the Sino-Soviet split, the Cultural Revolution, the historic opening of U.S.-China ties. Included among the 71 documents are CIA National Intelligence Estimates, which offer an unusual window into how the U.S. government perceived China before diplomatic relations were established. Sometimes the CIA got it right, and sometimes not. Joining us here in Studio 3A is James Mann, an author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. He's the author of About Face, A History of America's Curious Relationship with China from Nixon to Clinton. Thanks very much for coming in.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And joining us by phone from New York is Ambassador Winston Lord. He served as ambassador to China from 1985 to 1989. He was special assistant to Henry Kissinger during his secret meetings with the Chinese government. And Ambassador Lord, thank you for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
First, James Mann, tell us why these documents are so important.
Well, these documents give you a sense of what the American intelligence community was thinking about China, what the consensus was at any given point in time, and this covers the entire period of 50s, 60s, and early 70s. What's interesting to me, in particular, it covers the period of the Nixon administration's opening to China, and one of the things that it shows you is that the intelligence community, at least the people working on these national intelligence estimates, were pretty much in the dark, both about what was the thinking in Beijing and also, more surprisingly, perhaps about Washington. They really had these...
They were in the dark about their own government.
Yeah. Now, it may be that the CIA director at the time, that was Richard Helms, knew what Nixon and Kissinger were up to. But this was, after all, a secret opening. The people preparing the intelligence estimates kept thinking that China's policy towards the United States would never change. The quotes were they were going to be, continue in their policy of hostility, that Taiwan was going to be an insurmountable obstacle to any improvement in Sino-American relations.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't factor in. They really assumed that American policy towards Taiwan also wouldn't change. So the Nixon administration really... This is, Neil, in a sense, the opposite of what we've just seen with the national intelligence estimates on Iraq, where the issue is, did people do an estimate in order to support an administration's position? This is at the other end of things. The national intelligence estimates had almost no connection to policy.
Ambassador Lord, you were on the other end. You knew what was going on.
Well, absolutely, but the point is only about a dozen of people knew, and they're all in the White House, even the CIA, at least the great bulk, and certainly the analysts preparing these documents, did not know. Now, of course, these documents are not supposed to predict U.S. policy. They're supposed to predict China developments and policy, but there's no question, as Jim has indicated, that we'd get a better feel for the China policy if we knew that Mao and Zhou were thinking of these dramatic openings with the U.S., and none of that comes through in the documents. Now, I ought to quickly add, just in fairness, this is only one aspect of China's domestic and international policies that are covered in these documents. They didn't predict a major change between U.S. and China as it happened in the early 70s. They were somewhat better on the developing Sino-Soviet split over the years and on some of the domestic changes. And also the documents we looked at, and Jim has probably read a lot more than I have. I've only been able to look at the ones, and some of the ones, during the late 60s, early 70s. These are consensus documents in the intelligence community, which means you generally get to the more cautious, lowest common denominator approach. Even so, in some cases, they did quite well. In others, they were off the mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, James Mann, you have had a chance to look at more than Ambassador Lord has. I mean, for one thing, it looks as if the CIA was right that China was willing to intervene in the Korean War and right that China was not willing to intervene in Vietnam.
Right. They did get some things right. And as the ambassador says... And this was an indirectly a factor in the American opening to China. They got right the balance in military forces between the Soviet Union and China, and that balance was strongly in favor of the Soviet Union. It was the fear that the Soviet Union might invade China and be at least in some way successful that helped drive the Nixon-Kissinger opening to mm-hmm. China.
Ambassador Lord, as you've looked at the documents, I assume you focused mostly on the time that affected you most.
Right.
Did the intelligence get better after diplomatic relations were established with Beijing?
Well, just to be technical about it, we didn't establish diplomatic relations until President Carter in 79. But you mean after the opening?
After the opening, yes.
Interesting enough, first place, these were selective documents. First, they're only these collective approaches, what they call national intelligence estimates or special ones. Even those were selected for the volume that we looked at. And there were many other sources from the intelligence community, individual agencies in that community, reporting by cables, refugees, and so on. So you got to remember, this is only a slice of what was coming in. But there was a gap. We didn't see any documents except for one or two after the opening. So it was curious to me why they didn't provide these. Maybe they haven't declassified them yet, so I can't answer your question. But certainly what they missed before the dramatic secret trip of Kissinger, which I was on in July 71, and then the Nixon trip a few months later, was this sudden dramatic change that was taking place. In fact, they consistently underestimated Mao's revolutionary approach to things. They got sort of the context of his policy, including the developing Sino-Soviet tensions. But document after document suggested that while Mao was in charge, there wouldn't be a dramatic change, certainly toward the U.S. And that shows you the impact of personality on history. It's not just objective events, and they completely missed that aspect.
Mm-hmm. James Mann?
It did raise to me the question of whether, if the Nixon administration had realized how badly Mao and Zhou Enlai wanted to pursue this their opening to the United States. We think of it as the American opening to China, but mm-hmm. it was China's opening to the United States as well. If they had grasped this in the White House, did they have to make as many concessions? I think probably Ambassador Lord may not agree with this, but make as many concessions as they did, particularly on Taiwan. There was a whole series of five or six changes in the formulation of American policy towards Taiwan. And because the estimates don't recognize that Mao and Zhou need this opening, they may have not recognized how much leverage the United States had.
Well, this is a long conversation. We can have some other time. I don't buy the premise here. First of all, the two reasons that China opened, essentially. One was their concern about the Soviet Union, of course, including the border clashes in 69. That was their major reason. But also, they were totally isolated in the world, particularly during the Cultural Revolution, and they wanted to open up more generally. And I knew if they opened up with us, then the UN and Japan and Europe would come along. So there's no question, as Jim said, that they wanted the opening, but it was a tremendous leap for Mao and Zhou, even as it was for Nixon. It was not all that easy, and it was not self-evident that if you didn't do it correctly, and if we didn't talk in strategic terms to the Chinese, including the Soviet factor, that they would have moved, and they made many concessions. Both sides obviously had to make concessions. But, for example, on Taiwan, we opened up. We maintained our defense treaty troops on Taiwan, relations with them, diplomatic relations all through most of the 70s. And for China, this was a tremendous concession in turnabout. So we don't have time to get into the concessions. Obviously, there were forthcoming formulations by Kissinger and Nixon. But equally, Mao and Zhou made their own concessions. It was a mutual dance.
Winston Lord is former ambassador to China, currently co-chairman of the International Rescue Committee. Also with us, James Mann, author in residence at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. By the way, if you want to look at these documents that have been released, you can go to www.cia.gov. I always get a thrill when I log on to the CIA. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. James Mann, as we learn from some of the documents which have been disclosed also about the old Soviet days, the Cold War, we know that finding out intelligence about closed societies is exceptionally difficult. And again, we found that out in Iraq. We're continuing to find it out in North Korea. What does this tell us about how the CIA operates?
Well, you know, there's a tremendous mystique about the CIA, and they seem to not want to give up that mystique. They tend to have fewer sources than they acknowledge, and these documents sort of show us how little they knew about Beijing. They were very good. They're very good at extrapolating from what they know. They're good at overhead information, so they were to some extent able to track China's nuclear weapons program pretty well. But for actual sources, human sources who will tell you what top leaders are thinking, sometimes they don't have that much. Now, I think, you know, let me give you the broader picture on these intelligence documents. Again, as Ambassador Lord says, they've released 70 of a couple hundred national intelligence estimates. They are releasing information in general far more slowly than they said they would about 10 or 12 years ago. I remember when I was a reporter being present at a hearing where the director of the CIA said the Cold War is over and we're going to release the information on 10 or 11 covert operations
told
soon.
It to the late Senator Moynihan, as I remember, yes.
And they've now released three of those 11 after, I think, over a decade. So I don't want your listeners to get the idea that they're just opening up their files. Quite the reverse. They're pretty resistant.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Lord, what do we learn about China from these documents?
Well, you do learn, first of all, as I've already mentioned, although we knew that already, but it's further demonstration of how Mao put his personal imprint on even the most controversial policies, whether it's taking on the much stronger Soviet Union or opening up to us. We also learned what's still true today, that we don't have a good sense of the Chinese political decision-making. It's very opaque. Even to today, I would argue that we don't have a good sense of deliberations in the Politburo and who takes what positions and what stance. And here you've got the leader, Hu Jintao, the new leader of China, and he's leading a quarter of the world's population, and frankly, we don't know where he stands on some key issues. It's amazing. So these documents show you it was even worse in those days, of course, before the opening and the opaqueness, but how difficult it was to judge. Now, having said that, and get back to the earlier question as well, Kissinger and Nixon did know we had leverage with the Chinese, including from these documents, and, of course, events like the border clashes with the Russians. So we knew that they were concerned about their security and that they wanted to open up. And so we took that into account in our own positions in terms of our own leverage.
Mm-hmm. And James Mann, one difference between the documents about the Soviet Union, however slowly they're coming out, and China, well, more or less the same government is still in power in China. Does this give you any insight into, the history of the party and how it's developed to the institution we see today?
To take that difference one step further, not only is the same government in power, in the case of the Soviet Union, we have some of the archives from the other side. In this case, the Chinese say they're beginning to release some of their archives, and I guess in an extremely limited sense they are. But really, we don't get the picture from the Chinese side.
That's a very good point. I would agree with that completely.
So this is perhaps the best history we have at the moment.
There's some selective release by the Chinese, and I've been over there for a conference on this and so on, but I couldn't agree more with Jim. It remains, of course, opaque and repressive society in any event. Whatever its other advances, their system is still terribly restrictive and opaque, and it's very difficult to know what's going on, particularly on politically sensitive issues. And consistent with their control of information or anything controversial, they're releasing very little of what went on, even back 30 years ago.
Winston Lord, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ambassador Lord was an ambassador to China. Also, our thanks to James Mann. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.